Welcome to Inclusive Career Conversations, the go-to podcast for HR leaders, talent acquisition specialists, and D&I champions. I'm your host, Zoe Hayden-Jones, and each episode, we'll dive deep with thought leaders and trailblazers, uncovering actionable insights that empower you to create a more inclusive environment for everyone. I'm so glad you're here. Let's do this. So welcome to this week's episode. I'm really glad you're here. Before we dive in, here are five things you will learn from listening. Number one, the importance of active listening. Are you actively listening to your colleagues, to your team, to people in your organization? Jeremy talks about creating space for diverse perspectives, especially from women. Number two, how to be a better ally through education, curiosity, and using privilege to amplify underrepresented voices. Number three, common unconscious biases like interrupting women in conversations and how to develop self-awareness. Number four, the value of taking a long-term holistic approach. Did you notice how I emphasize the words long term? There's a lot of companies that are just looking ahead a few months. But Jeremy really talks about this long-term perspective to creating inclusive workplaces through commitment, strategic initiatives, and connecting to the organizational values and the organizational purposes or purpose. And the final one, number five, you're gonna hear personal stories of allies like Jeremy that show the positive impact of open-mindedness, reflection, and ongoing learning when it comes to gender equity. It is a brilliant chat. You're going to learn loads, and I'm really glad you're here. Don't forget to send this episode to someone that might benefit and follow us for more. Enjoy. So welcome to another episode of Inclusive Career Conversations. I'm very delighted to welcome this week's guest. We have Jeremy Stockdale from Y-Lead. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Zoe. Well, really, thank you very much for asking me to come on it as well. I feel very honoured to be on your podcast.
I was so excited. We were just chatting off the pod before I hit record. I end up talking to my guests for far too long. And then eventually we say, shall we just hit record? And then we do. We were just saying, Jeremy and I, that we found each other on LinkedIn. Your posts are incredible. And we're going to delve into that. But just let's just start right from the beginning. Talk to us about your background, about Y-Lead, and just a little intro for everyone listening.
Yeah, thanks, Zoe. I mean, I think it's one of the beautiful things about LinkedIn is just the people you meet in there is fabulous. And we only met a couple of weeks ago and here we are. So, yeah, my background is my first career was spent in banking. I spent 27 years at Barclays. And if I'm honest, my passion was never really banking. It was, but what I did discover is my passion became leadership. So about midway through my career, I ended up leading quite large teams. And after a couple of years of not being very good at it, I began to find it really rewarding and thought, this is what I want to do. I saw leadership as a real privilege. I love the responsibility. And so I led teams across the UK. I had some time in Africa and it was, yeah, I loved it. And I left in 2019 because I thought probably 27 years was long enough. I formed Y-Lead because I wanted more leaders to lead with a sense of just purpose. You know, why do they lead and why should others follow them? And to lead with compassion and humanity. And if these are the things we don't teach leaders, and I think it's where we often go wrong. And so that's what I've been doing for the last 4 years. But my focus has really now honed in on is just gender equity and gender allyship. And it's not a move away from leadership, because I genuinely believe if we had more female leaders and more leaders generally showing a broader range of traits than the overtly masculine ones that they're taught and embracing things like vulnerability and compassion and collaboration into their leadership, I think the world would be a better place, workplaces would be fairer. So yeah, in a nutshell, that's what I do.
So just going back to your point earlier, you know that you said the first 2 years of leadership, did you say you didn't enjoy it or?
Well, I wasn't very good. I enjoyed the first 6 months. I had a lovely honeymoon period. And then I sort of realized I didn't know what to do in certain situations, but worst of all, so did my team. And so I kind of blundered through for a while, but just, yeah, I wasn't a particularly good leader. Didn't really know what I was doing. Didn't know how to lead at scale and lead remotely. And so it was tough. It was tough for me and I didn't enjoy it. But I didn't enjoy it particularly because I could see that I wasn't able to give the people I was leading what they needed and what they deserved. And the turning point for me was when my boss took pity on me, probably out of frustration, and said, go and spend a day with these two other leaders. These were peers of mine in different parts of the country. And I just watched them in action. And that was a game changer because I've been told loads of best practices and loads of tips and things, but actually seeing people leading, seeing how they talk to people, just how they do it, made the world of difference. So I just brought some of that back, gradually started to kind of find my own style. And when I started to have a little bit of success, I thought, oh my God, this is what I want to do. This is, you know, but maybe because I had a really tough couple of years, it made me appreciate actually when, with a bit of effort, things start to get better. So.
I think that's really interesting for anyone listening. We had Cheryl Thompson on the podcast talking about leadership. And I think that, you know, there's a lot out there, isn't there, about a manager versus a leader. And I think it's really interesting for people listening to hear your story that you had such a successful career. But at the beginning, you know, it's not always easy. And I love that anecdote about going to see it in action because, I mean, gosh, so people learn in different ways, but I can feel the way you say it, it's kind of like things maybe started to click and then you took that away. That's great for maybe any organizations listening as a way to empower their leaders to become better. And then obviously the work that you're doing now, how did it get to the gender equality, gender yeah. equity piece? How did you go from that to that?
Well, the story I will tell, because it is exactly what happened, is that I genuinely thought I was one of the good guys. And throughout my corporate career, and really for the first 51 years of my life, I thought I was I didn't really know much about the term male allyship. I would have said I was a male ally. I was, you know, I did the right thing. I would sponsor and mentor women. I'd have a good gender balance in my team. I truly appreciated the value of having the different value that women can bring. And having that balance of the importance of it. And what happened about 3 years ago that really made me realize I just didn't know much at all was when Sarah Everard was killed. And of course, it's quite timely because it is the third anniversary. I spoke to a female friend of mine and said, what can I do to be a better male ally? And she said, read two books. And so the two books were Everyday Sexism by Laura Bates and Invisible Women by Caroline Credo Perez. And I did read them both. And it's not that I didn't know sexism existed, but I had no idea of the scale of it. Just the ways that women have to, the conscious and unconscious adjustments women have to make on a daily basis just to keep themselves safe, even in the most benign of circumstances. And then Invisible Women, it's just the data biases of that book revealed around how the world is designed by and for men. And having read both of those books, it just made me think, first of all, it changed my perspective. I thought, I didn't know this stuff. I want to know more. So then I read loads more stuff. And more importantly, I spoke to hundreds or keep speaking to hundreds of women to find out what the world is really like. And it changed my perspective, but then it changed my life because I thought, this is what I want to do now. So my purpose in life and through Y-Lead is to create gender equity through gender allyship. And it's not about let's all men give something to women because we will benefit too. You know, we suffer under patriarchal systems, you know, we suffer under gender stereotypes in a different way, but we do. And so, yeah, that's what kind of got me into it. And yeah, so 51 years, I was flying blind. And now for the last 3 years, I feel I'm understanding the world better and I'm learning all the time, still learning all the time.
I love that. That's they are two incredible books and it's really nice to hear the way you, I guess, that you know, when you were just recounting that story and you said you always thought you were a good guy, you were a good guy. It's just, it's more the education piece, isn't it? That it was kind of like, wow, seeing it from someone else's eyes, someone else's experiences. So yeah. What is a male ally when we're talking about gender equality?
Yeah, so that's a great question because I think there'll be many definitions. You know, there'll be so many things out there. But I think it's more about, for me, allyship is obviously it's a verb, not a noun. So I think rather than what is a male ally, I prefer to think, well, what is allyship? How does a male show up as an ally for gender? And I think there's a number of things that are really important. But if I can just hone in on some of the main ones, the first thing is what a male ally does is they listen to women. So they ask questions and they show a genuine interest, but they listen and they don't talk. So when you ask a question, tell me about your experience, then you absorb that experience. You don't have to find a solution. You don't have to opine. You certainly don't want to be man-terrupting or indeed then mansplaining her experience to her. And we fall into these traps because of social conditioning, not because we're inherently bad. So I think listening to women is the first thing. The second thing is, I think, just having a genuine curiosity about the topic. And, don't expect to be educated by someone, by other people. Go out and find out, read stuff. And obviously, talk to women, but read books, watch, listen to things like this, podcasts, and, watch TED Talks. And then I think once you've done that, because I think for me, allyship is a journey that starts with awareness. So I now understand the issues. The second step is acceptance. So, I acknowledge that is the reality. It's not what I thought, but it is. And then I think you're in a position where you can commit to move forward and take action. That's, I think, what the steps you have to go through. There's no point saying, well, men, what you need to do is this, this, and this, because they won't feel that genuine commitment because they're not really aware of the issues and they don't accept that that is the reality. They might do it performatively because you're told to do it, but they have to feel it themselves. So I think it's why go through a journey of educating yourself by speaking to women, listening to them and reading stuff. And then you're in a position where you can start to take some tangible action, which is a long-winded answer to quite a simple question. So apologies.
No, I loved every part of that. And I went to an event and the topic of active listening was quite prevalent. And I'm fascinated by the subject, especially since I've started podcasting. The skill to active listening and really listening is something that we can all practice, and we're not supposed to just be amazing at it. And I think this is, again, to your point earlier about this education piece, we're not supposed to know everything. So I feel like the whole allyship piece, it doesn't mean that you have to be incredible straight away, but just taking that approach to educating yourself, asking those questions is so powerful. And I think the more we spread that word, the greater those ripple effects and those waves that we're going to make. So I have to ask, I mean, this is how I found you, with your incredible terms that seem to go viral on LinkedIn. Mansplaining. Have I said that right?
Yes.
And what was the other one? I mean, talk to me. Mansruptions. Love it. Talk to us about those.
So, I mean, I've heard these terms probably for a few years. I'm even vaguely aware of them. But through the work I now do, I've done a bit of research into it to understand it. And of course, what I've also done is I've developed a little bit of self-awareness and realize that I do this as well. I am an archetypal middle-aged white man. So I will do the things that we do. So a mansruption is, the technical definition is an unnecessary interruption of a woman by a man. And if that seems quite triggering to think, oh, well, we all interrupt each other, because of course we do. We all interrupt each other all the time. We're very busy. We listen through filters. But the research shows that men are three times more likely to interrupt women than they are other men. And this was really proved. They looked at the transcripts, the US Supreme Court. They looked at transcripts of court cases. And there's six men and three women on the Supreme Court. And these are amongst, theoretically at least, the most learned, well-educated and respected people in the world. So when they talk, you'd expect people to listen. But what the transcripts show is that the female justices, and remember there's half of them, the female justices were interrupted four times more often than their male counterparts, four times more often. And 96% of the time they were interrupted, it was by men.
Wow.
So mansplaining is a thing. It really happens. And what I say to men is this isn't having a go. It's not because you're bad. It's because we've been socially conditioned from a very, very early age to share our thoughts, to be quite confident, to be assertive and to be boastful, but be proud of, your achievements and to share your knowledge. Women, on the other hand, from quite an early age, are taught to be modest and agreeable and don't show off and to be compliant. And I know those are generalizations, but again, research shows that's what tends to happen. And so that carries through into later life. So men have a tendency to want to speak and have a perception, actually, or misperception of how often they speak and for how long. And they also, you know, think that when women speak a tiny fraction of the time that they're dominating the conversation. There's all kinds of research behind this. So what I say to people, and I've had this, always get the same reaction when I talk about man interruptions with an audience of people, the men always go, well, I'm not sure that's a thing. And the women tend to go, oh my God, yeah, it happens all the time. So what I say is go out and test it, go out and see what happens. And the men always come back and they always say something like, I tested it, I wasn't sure, but I tested it in social settings or in workplaces. And oh my God, we interrupt women all the time. I have no idea. One guy said to me quite recently, I feel sick to my stomach because I go to do it. And now I stop myself because it's in my head, it's consciously. And I think that's amazing then. So you've become aware of something, you've acknowledged that's reality, and now you're taking action. And so yeah, I still do it. I'm having conversations with people and I mentally check myself from interrupting because I'm keen to contribute. But you think, no, because I'm missing out on what they're saying. And it's not, I'm not having the courtesy of, or not giving them the courtesy of actually speaking. So man interrupting is a thing. And it's one of those things where if we could just become more aware and realize that's what tends to happen, and it's no one's fault, we can change it. And we can create more space for different views. And men can actually get the benefit of listening to things they wouldn't otherwise hear because they're trying to opine and take some of the pressure off of having to be kind of knowledgeable. So you made a really great point earlier on about how we don't like to find out that we're wrong and having to learn new things. I mean, Michelangelo said at age 87, I'm still learning. And there's something really, for me, really wonderful about finding out I'm wrong, because it means that the next day I'm less wrong. You know, I always try and say that every night I'll try and sleep less stupid than the night before.
And that's fascinating. Yeah. Sorry, did I just interrupt? Are you going to keep going? Keep talking to me?
No, I was going for too long. So I think it was a valid kind of interruption and very nice again as well.
I was just going to say about that awareness piece when you said that you asked those men that you were working with to go do a test. And yeah, then they had that sort of epiphany, like, oh wow, yeah, this is actually happening. So how do you go into, do you do talks on this in organizations? How can the people listening that work in organizations use this information to create a more inclusive environment at work?
That is a great question. So yes, I do. I go into organizations and I'll share some of the stuff that I'm learning. I mean, it could be a quick 20-minute session that I might do, or it could be a half-day workshop. Well, it doesn't really matter what it is. All that does is raise awareness, and it can be beneficial that some people take stuff away and think, okay, oh, that's interesting, I didn't know that. I will sleep less stupid and maybe I can do things differently. The trouble with that is that you don't create change that way. So organizations that can make a difference to this have to understand, you know, three things really. First of all, you've got to be committed to this at the top of the organization. You can't just see this as a performative thing. Well, it's International Women's Week, what can we do? It has to be something where you're trying to create something like, you know, you're trying to create an equitable workforce, an inclusive workforce where everyone, regardless of their gender or intersectionality, can bring their full self to work. That's what you need. It's the top of the organization to feel that. Then what you need to do is to take a long-term view and set some goals and be committed to doing something, not next month or even this year, but go 3 to 5 years out. You know, companies always overestimate what can be done in the short term and they underestimate what can be done in the long term. So take a long-term view and be committed to this, because you won't change this overnight. You know, we're talking about centuries of, you know, societal conditioning. And then the final thing is, once you've got those things in place, then you start to take some committed action. And things like allyship, it's a journey. You don't just kind of do a half day or a 20 minute or whatever session and people go, oh, right, yeah, I'll stop being chauvinistic now, or I'll stop displaying these kind of traits that I've just found out about. It doesn't work that way. You have to take people on a journey over a period of time and then leave something in place that they can then continue it. Because I'm still learning all the time. I mean, every day I'm learning. From this podcast, I'll be learning. So that's what I think organizations need to do. And therefore, I'll only really work with organizations now that can demonstrate that they are committed to this, not in a performative way. Because otherwise, I'm wasting my time and theirs, frankly, and their money.
Yeah, absolutely. And then when we're thinking about, I think you said it right at the beginning about well, we all know the stats tell us that a diverse leadership team makes a company more successful, more profitable. It's kind of a no-brainer, which we know, but there's still companies that are struggling to diversify their leadership. What do companies maybe come to you that have those targets, or why would they, do they just recognize that it's a piece of work that needs to happen? And I know you've said it's slow, we're all learning, it's ever changing. I'm just trying to understand, I guess, you know, if they haven't got women at the top, but they're trying to do this work, should they not focus on getting the women into the top? Or do you think it's just a whole piece that needs looking at?
Yeah, so again, it's another really good question. And I think I, like most things, I'll probably sort of say a bit of both, because as a typical Libra, and I always tend to see both sides of things, which can maybe sound quite wishy-washy. But anyway, I think that I don't almost don't mind what the catalyst is. I don't mind what the catalyst is, as long as it feels genuine. So if the catalyst is that there is some societal pressure coming through, or there's some government legislation that says you need to have more women on boards or something, that's fine, because then I can have a conversation about how they can use that catalyst, that to actually create something beneficial. I think it's the same though as individuals, that organizations have to find their why. Why do they care about it? What is it that's making them want to do this? Because if it's just some regulatory initiatives they need to meet, then it won't go that far. They can meet those quite easily. But if it's because they can recognize there is a broader benefit to having better representation in leadership positions, or they can recognize that, you know, you're going to really struggle to operate in a very complex VUCA world if all of your board and leadership, or the vast majority, are middle-aged white men. I mean, it doesn't matter how bright they are, how capable they are, and they probably all of those things, but they just won't have the range of lived experiences you need to envisage what might happen in the future, or even to hypothesize about those things, because it's so difficult to predict. So if I can just get into organizations and find that little bit of a spark, it might even be an economic thing, because the economics behind gender equity are so compelling, it amazes me more organizations don't address those. So it really is whatever it has to be something that is authentic. It's just, well, we want to get someone in to talk about women for International Women's Day. It's like, well, I'm the wrong person for that, really. But I think more and more organizations now are starting to, there's so many factors that are coming in. There's societal impacts. And I think the Me Too movement, for me, I was a little bit sad it didn't quite progress as it should. But I really think it's one of those things that has just laid a bit of a foundation for other things. So there's much more awareness now of inappropriate behavior, the fact it goes on. And we've seen other reports come out about sort of, you know, female surgeons and stuff they have to put up with in the UK. It's just mind blowing. So there is more awareness for this stuff now. And then there's, you know, societal pressure around things like pay parity. It's all starting to build something here, which I think is quite positive. It's then how do we harness that and mean that you don't just make just tokenistic little steps forward like we're currently doing, but you can start to make some real, you know, real sort of seismic steps forward in the next 5 to 10 years.
It's so powerful as well. Conversations like this that we're having, and I always use that term ripple effect, but you know, like when that person told you to read those two books, like how that triggered that, this, the work that you're doing, this opening of your mind to what women have experienced up to now, and then how it's in our power to make these changes. It's so exciting. And this is why I'm in this world where you work, because I feel so passionate about it as well. Have you encountered any pushback or negativity in the work that you do?
I have, yes. I do a post every Wednesday, which is how we met, which is the title of it is On Wednesdays We Smash the Patriarchy. And the genesis of that is my daughter, Phoebe, who's at university in Bristol. She has a T-shirt that says On Wednesdays We Smash the Patriarchy. And I've always thought it's rather cool. We've often talked about it. But when I read Everyday Sexism a few years ago, you know, she read it next. And we've had lots of conversations about these things. I've learned a lot from her because of the way she views the world. And so I've been writing, doing these posts now every Wednesday since April last year, coming up to a year. And I think as I grow in confidence and grow my knowledge, I'm dipping into different topics like, you know, man interruptions and mansplaining, which can be quite triggering for some people. I mean, I haven't really experienced much of that. Most of them seem to be supportive. And what was really encouraging about those is that men coming in and saying, oh my, I hadn't heard of this. I didn't know. I'll look out for it. So that is small steps, but that's lovely. But no, I did a post about, I have been trolled by a few people who don't like the fact I'm talking about these things. But I did one recently where I talked about menstruation and how we start to talk more and more about menopause, but you know, menstruation affects basically 800 million people at any point in time every day. That's what it is. So, and it can be a very debilitating impact. So why don't we make that a conversation that people can have should they choose to? And it was triggered by a conversation I had with Phoebe again, where we were discussing various things one weekend, and we talked about just how difficult her periods were for her when she was a teenager, how painful it was, and you know, really unpleasant. And she just basically had to soldier on, just had to get on with it. But I got quite a backlash on that one. Interestingly, it was mostly from women saying, this is a bit creepy. We don't think men should be talking about this. We don't want it to be shared. And I was going, well, I'm not saying you have to share. It's one of those things where you're trying to catch a falling knife because you're saying, no, I didn't mean that. Oh, no, I'm not saying this. And I couldn't quite keep up. But you know what? The point is, that's fine. If you aren't having people disagree with you, you're in an echo chamber. So I think it's really important that people do. Because I learn from that. I may not agree with them, but I learn from the fact they have different views. And I think, okay, well, that's okay. I don't agree. Or maybe I will in some cases. But I now understand something else, different perspectives. It makes me a bit more thoughtful about how I might write about these things. But the other thing I was going to say, Zoe, is if I write about these things, I get a little bit of backlash. I know for a fact it's nothing compared to the backlash that women have when they write about it. Just the trolling they receive, the level of, you know, abuse at times they can receive. I've had a benign time of it so far. So it makes me more determined to use my privilege to create change and to help, hopefully support others who frankly have more lived experience and knowledge than me. They absolutely do, but because of my privilege, when I talk about these things, I might get a better reception. So I'll use that to try and help the cause, you know.
Yeah, and I love your Wednesday posts, and I think that obviously we don't want trolling, but I do think it opens the dialogue up, you know, like how you explained, you see it from someone else's. And I had a similar experience on LinkedIn where I hadn't thought about a different perspective. And I was like, wow, okay, brilliant. And I took a step back. And I think this is the power of this open dialogue, having these conversations like you and I are having today. And I have to just say, I love that you and Phoebe have that open relationship about menstruation. My dad on my wedding speech actually mentioned my periods. It was hilarious. And we still joke about it today because
awesome.
Always had painful periods. And he made like a joke about being the family like gynecologist or something, and everyone was like laughing hysterically. And I said to him recently how amazing that we had that open dialogue at home, and it was, you know, like, don't suffer in silence. Don't pretend it's not happening. Because like you say, it's affecting half the population at one point or another.
Yeah.
So I want you to keep going with those posts as well, because I'm here for it. We need to have those conversations. And I agree, menopause is huge. Let's keep that going. But let's talk about, you know, the other things that women are experiencing. I spoke to a global organization, gosh, probably last year. And they tried to implement a menopause policy, and they had such backlash from the males or people that identified that didn't have menstruation. I think they were trying to implement maybe a day off or something, and then they couldn't run with it. I was so shocked that it was just kind of halted, which is sad. Yeah. And it just makes me wonder, you know, I feel like companies are, sometimes they're staying in the middle to keep the peace. But it's like, how are we going to progress if we're just trying to keep the peace? Have you got any thoughts on that?
Well, I think you're right. I mean, that is really sad, because something really well intentioned, it just, as you say, just stopped. It wasn't like, let's have a look at this from a different angle. Let's try and find a way of making it. No, just stopped. Too difficult. It's like, oh, that's really unfortunate. So for me, I think there's having a really clear sense of purpose, I think, is key. I mean, I say that particularly because, you know, that I feel I have that personally. I mean, it applies to personal things, but it applies to organizations as well. So with something like a policy around the menopause or trying to do that, is be clear about why, what are we trying to create with this? And by doing so, are we disadvantaging anyone else? Are we actually not sort of, so just be really clear about your purpose and how that connects to the purpose of your organization. Now, the trouble is some organizations don't really have proper purposes, or they've got them made up for them at great expense by a consultant. So they'll have a strap line, but it's not a real sense of purpose. So that's a problem if you haven't got it. But let's assume you have, then just connect those things to it. So I don't know, if your purpose is something like enriching people's lives, then, well, clearly, when as women go through the menopause, you want them to be able to navigate through that as comfortably as possible. So that when they come out the other side, with still 40% of their lives to live, they feel great and they feel supported and they can still contribute to the economy and to the workforce. And then I think it's about explaining to people that this isn't a zero sum game. You know, when you create opportunities for a disadvantaged group or a particular element of difficulty people face, it naturally opens up opportunities for everyone else. So it's infinite, not zero sum. But very often it's seen as, well, what about me then? What about me? Well, let's have that conversation then. Let's have a conversation. What do you need? They need this, but what do you need? And so I think that's where I've seen a lot of backlash recently about DEI. And I don't necessarily agree with the way people are tackling the backlash, but I do agree that DEI isn't working. Because for too many years, it's been too short term, it's been too performative, and we can actually see in the results that we're not making progress. So, and one of the things, I think it has to be more inclusive. It has to be something that is includes everyone in it. So whether you're personally benefiting or whether you're an ally in the cause, if everyone can see what's in it for them, then it will make a massive difference. So we just have to think of it differently. And a lot of that comes down to just stop trying to think about what you do this year. Think about where you want to be in 5 years' time.
I think that's fantastic advice. Right? Yeah. And drawing it back to the values, like the real purpose instead of like a tick box. Wow. Well, thank you for sharing your wisdom, your insights, your anecdotes. It's been such a pleasure to chat to you today. If people want to connect with you, where can they find you?
Best to find me on LinkedIn. So just give me a follow on there, drop me a DM. I'd love to chat to anyone about these things. So, and listen as well.
And I will put the link to your LinkedIn profile in the show notes. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Zoe.
Such a great episode. And I hope you learn as much from Jeremy as I did. I think it was just so refreshing to speak to a male about everything that women have going on in the workplace and in their personal lives. And I think the more we have these conversations, the more we're going to make waves and real change at work, changing cultures, not just talking about it, but actually making a real impact to make the workplace work for everyone. So if you are enjoying our podcast, we would appreciate it if you could hit the follow button and leave us a review. One review is the equivalent to 1,000 downloads. So just taking a moment now to do that means the world to us. It means we can reach more people, speak to more incredible guests, and make the workplace a brilliant place to be for everyone. And if you're interested in what we are doing, you can find out more by heading to jobsforwomen.co.uk or jobsforneurodiverse.co.uk, and feel free to reach out, contact a member of the team if you're looking to reach more women or neurodiverse candidates in your recruitment process, or just talk about the amazing things you are doing as an inclusive employer. We would love to hear from you. That's it for another week. Take care of yourselves, and we'll see you next time.